Welcome back, folks. We are looking at 33 minutes after the hour of 4 o'clock. You're listening to The Overdrive right here on Freedom 106.5 FM. With us in studios, we have two special guys here for you. It's time for Tasty Tuesdays. Chef Sean Spencer, and he's a young but experienced culinary artisan. And I think somebody misused that word there, but... Okay, all right. We'll say young. we leave it as that. Who has his way around the hospitality industry and especially the kitchen? He knows his way around the kitchen, I should say. And we have with us Chef Shiraz Catering. Am I correct? I was saying the name out because I was trying to just find one punchline there, but I couldn't. I'd say you're a veteran with over 25 years of experience, with more than 25 years of experience in the culinary industry. Chef Shiraz, you are mentioned here as a seasoned professional with a wealth of training and expertise, having a passion for the culinary arts is undeniable and has made him a stalwart in the industry. All right, so guys, welcome.
Hello. Good to be here once again. Good afternoon, Trinidad and Tobago. I'm watching Chef resume here, executive chef, consultant, educator, owner, and catering chef.
Raj, you've been around the block, boy.
I gotta keep moving ahead of time.
Yeah, ma'am. This is quite impressive. I mean, I personally know Chef Shiraz from years ago. We actually had the opportunity of working together in an early aspiring culinary. he's laughing, right? Early culinary aspiring. I think we were young teenagers, right? Yeah. At that time, yeah. You make me feel old.
He was frying chicken.
Yeah, we were young and trying to figure out our future and where does the future leads in the next 20, 30 years, what part, if we're going to stay. Yeah, so it was quite interesting that probably after 20 years, we're here again. And we were one of the lucky ones that stayed true to our passion, right?
It's actually the first time we've seen each other in, 20 something
years? Yeah, the first time, yeah.
No. Oh, really?
Yeah.
The first time you have seen each other, 20 something years?
Yeah.
So.
It's quite good. It's quite.
So you all understand now why I say what I say earlier.
Yeah, man. Very, very.
So
nice.
What are you gonna educate me on today?
Well,
I love being in the kitchen.
Well, so. Welcome to Tasty Tuesdays. It's good having you here. Usually, I like having somebody who doesn't really know anything, so you could ask.
I'm an amateur.
You could boil water?
I could boil water.
You sure?
I could boil an egg.
You could boil an egg. How long do you leave your egg to boil for?
Don't ask me that.
Oh, Lord Jesus. Yeah, but she's a bacchanal. It's super.
Don't ask me that.
But do you know?
But I know it's not going to be soft in the middle.
Do you know?
I don't like it like that.
You know, there's a time for soft boil, hard boil.
Yeah, I am totally aware of that.
Okay.
But I just don't know it.
Do you boil? Jesus. Do you know when you boil your eggs? Do you know when you boil your eggs and it's gray after and it's overboiled and you have this all this gray and dark look to it?
Yeah.
Do you know that's not really a good thing, right? That's the sulfur in the egg that comes out. Yeah, she's her eyes. So everybody who she's quiet now, so her eyes is all over. She eyes went toko, come back. She's trying to find the words to.
No, I'm trying to find the words. I'm guilty, so I just have to say
that. So you are the one of them that boil your eggs.
Hard boiled eggs.
So you have.
But I didn't know it was not.
So you know when you pass gas, that's part of the reason why your gas is.
Yeah, probably. I never really could have told you the front. So.
Oh, good. It's funny. Well, it's good having you here, having Shiraz here. And today, our topic today is cooking for the next generation. And both my co-host last, Davey, who is not here, Murray, always argue about certain stuff, right? And one of the stuff I always argue about him, or always try to tell him, is have you ever took your kids to, let's say, make market?
Yeah.
simple thing as making market or grocery shopping or stuff like that. Because what I found out and from our conversation last week, and I was explaining that our culture actually trained the kids how to eat. And I've noticed that from spending some time abroad. And I don't think our culture in Trinidad is one like that.
As you say that, I grew up as a young man in Glastonbury.
Uh-huh.
My father was a butcher, and we had a batwa here.
A what?
A batwa.
A batwa. What's a batwa?
That is for the animals.
Oh, okay, okay.
Right. So I used to go to Maribola Market.
Uh-huh.
They used to send me to make market at the age of 11, 12 years.
Oh.
I used to go to a list of the market.
Yeah.
And then I used to go to the grocery and make groceries as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I actually was lucky to grow up in that culture. Going to the grocery, I went to the supermarket, going to the grocery and going to the market and making market and bring it home. And then as we had the abattoir home and we kill the animal on a weekend, we used to also know to eat. Cook that meat as well, eat that meat as well. So we were cultured, luckily, with that aspect of it. And it's important for these kids with this generation to know that as well, too, especially if you're in the food industry. You had to go and experience that as well.
So you think that was part of the reason that turned on your culinary skills, because you were able to go to the market and you said slaughtering, you said? So you were part of that experience as a young kid?
Yeah. Yeah, but my father was a butcher as well for a number of years, well, 40 years. And well, at that age, I didn't know I would have been in the food industry.
Yeah.
But you see how things work out. With that knowledge, later on in years,
It kicked in.
Yes, so yes. But I used to go to the market, and I used to tell you to cut some meat by the butcher, and they say, watch me, and say, oh,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I knew when I go to buy vegetables, I know exactly what I'm looking for. And all those things were taught by my age of 11 years. Mm-hmm. I didn't know I was going to be a chef.
Yeah.
But all these experience kicked in later on. It kicked in later on. You know what I mean? So it helped us well.
Well, that's quite interesting that he said that, because one of my talking points last week again is the Jewish community. I would see them bringing their kids in to delis or whatever have you, and they would actually give them a history of every single item, because they went through the Holocaust and stuff like that. So as the kids get older, and actually I was telling someone this, it's so ironic that in the Jewish community, there are certain things that is not allowed in their community. Fried chicken, KFC is not allowed. Hamburgers and stuff like McDonald's and stuff is not allowed in the community. Liquor store, I shouldn't say a liquor store. Liquor store is, but liquor mat is not allowed. So you can't really go in and buy little pints and stuff. You can only buy the expensive stuff. So they actually train the kids, and they kind of protect the community to make sure that they eat healthy.
True.
And it was quite ironic when I went back to my community where I used to live in New Jersey, and I would call it the hood. And there was KFCs and liquor store
every
all
corner.
Over. Yes. All over the on my area. And and so ironic that everybody too who lives there, they were wearing big clothes.
Yeah.
And for 1 minute I was kinda wondering, wait now, what's really happening here? And the liquor store on Friday afternoon, there were lines of people. So, and there was some, you know, when I went back, I'm a chef. So when I go to Manhattan and stuff, and you know, there's a certain ethnic group that only come in and they're having broccoli and Brussels sprouts, and they're looking skinny. And I'm like, what's going on?
Yeah.
And then I started recognizing that it's a cultural stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And even though, and I always tell David this, when I went to Brooklyn to work, and there was different, my culture came in, our West Indian culture came in, and there was a difference how they eat as well. Yeah. They would taste the food, they would roll it up in their mouth, they would try to look for a reason to say it's not tasting good.
Mm. Yeah.
And whether it's tasting good or not, we actually focus more on the taste than the health benefit.
True.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think that is one of the things that I was telling one of my customers this morning. Because he's trying to eat healthy, he's trying his best, and it's a battle for him.
Mm-hmm.
And for the love of money, some people can't eat a salad.
No.
They could never digest a salad or eat broccoli or stuff like that. And I was telling him, is how you wired your brain.
Yeah.
Because we got tricked in today's world to eat the stuff that tastes good.
Yeah.
We got
traditionally.
Traditionally. Because after, I think we exist probably over 2,000 years now.
Mm-hmm.
So we end up with the best tasting food, the ice cream, the fried chicken.
And that's because we discovered what else to do with it.
So true.
How to chemically enhance them.
It, yeah.
Yeah, and they are dealing with the raw product, the beauty of the what comes from the earth.
Yes.
The one thing I can't understand that they say is a beauty that comes from the earth is Brussels sprout.
Oh my God, that is so beautiful.
Something is wrong with you.
How difficult, let me ask you this question. Mm-hmm. How difficult it is, you think it is to cook for this generation?
Very.
If we have noticed in the last, like I said, 10 years, we are eating all culture now.
Yeah.
Trinidad has turned at eating culture, but it's what are they eating?
Yeah.
What
and
are they?
That's where we've seen a rise in obesity as well.
And we have a high obesity in Trinidad.
Yeah.
We have a high obesity in Trinidad. And as you say, going back to the culture of food, we have to know the culture of our food.
We have a rich culture
of food here, you know. We're talking from the ingredients, the market, the seasonings, you know, all these high seasons we have on things as well. All the products we have here, and we have vegetation here from the farm, everything, but it's how we use it and how we're going to traditionally change. Because what these young generation eat, well, I should say they move away from heritage food, heritage and cultural food. They move away from that.
And a lot of them kind of, like, they're ashamed of eating their heritage food too as
and,
well.
And those are that is the healthy. Listen, you go back in time. Yes, Imad, look at long. We didn't have all these franchises here.
Mm-hmm.
We were more healthier.
Yeah.
Weren't we more healthier 25 years ago?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Simple thing we were eating.
Very
so you,
true.
So you think it's a product of marketing from the
mass marketing? Yeah.
From the U.S. Because we really, there's something about our culture, just want to be American. We want to be American. Yeah.
We want to do exactly. Yeah. We see something on TV and or online and we just go to it. We were not a very large coffee drinking nation
people are lining up for coffee.
You know, but now Starbucks
they
go to Starbucks and they look for the longest name to call out on the menu because it's Starbucks. I think we too Americanized. We need to go back to
we grew up on green tea, brewing green tea. There was a green leaf green tea long.
Yeah.
And they'd be home with coffee. We grew up on that. That's it.
And it's a tight in a little cloth.
Yeah, that's it.
And put it to boil.
You know, you said that, and I remember when I was in the States and now started. I'm talking about 15, 17 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I was now having Starbucks. And I would stand in line. I would try my best to read the menu, understand the menu. So when I stand in front of the line, I could say it like how everybody cappuccino with foam and extra.
The first time I went to the US is about 21, 22 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first and the last time I had that.
A Starbucks?
In Manhattan. And that was it. Never, all the years I tried, I never had it again. That's it.
I drink Starbucks, but I don't see nothing extraordinary about it beside the price, really.
Marketing.
Yeah. Marketing.
It's mass marketing.
The way they present it,
yeah.
I have a name.
They make you feel like you're important with the name on the cup and all of that.
Marketing is so, so critical. I just want to drift a little bit and jump on marketing a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Last year I was in Canada, and we went to Niagara Falls. And all the crowd and all the people happened. And I pulled back and I said, look at this. They took just some water falling and make a whole tourist attraction with this. Just that water falling and putting lights on it.
Yes,
look at that. Hotels, casinos.
Yes, you name it.
Marketing again. You come back to marketing again.
Yeah, that you're quite right. You're quite right. I have a niece and she said, Uncle, can you cook something with boba and tapioca? So I'm like, what? So I'm embarrassed. I said, I didn't know what boba or tapioca was.
Yeah.
So she said, and she started, you're a chef and you don't know what this is. And she went from A to Z.
From the States?
No, she's here. She's here.
All right. That's a good point.
And I said that because from a young age already watching the YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
And they're already been influenced.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now it seems like what is the, and that these are going to be some of my questions for you later on. But I would say they're just preempting and you could think about it. What are some of the new trends? Because as soon as they see it, they think it's a trend and there's a need. You create somehow the other, your brain creates a need. Oh, I have to try this. I have to. Even for me in my own establishment, for my restaurant, I create my own personal trends.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, I have a very niche market and I create trends for my own market.
Yeah.
And so you create needs that you make people feel like, oh my, I can't live without this. I just have to have it.
Yeah.
All right. So what are some of the trends in today's generation that you think is happening?
One of the trends,
food
trends, I think that is spoiling this generation is the food networks and the YouTube and whatnot. It is spoiling that they forget the traditional things. They forget the heritage. Yes, you see things on the YouTube and you want to try it and whatnot, but remember we had to, each culture, country, push their own
agenda.
And we had to stick with our agenda. We could use, I have been using in my kitchen all the local ingredients and being creative. So you become that creative part of it. So, for example, you know, when you travel to the U.S. and different state, you get hash browns.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go to Texas,
uh-huh,
or you go to New York and a Delhi, you get different home fries or hash browns.
Yes, yes, yes.
I took in my class recently, and some client, I took sweet potatoes,
uh-huh,
cassava, and plantains, and make hash browns.
Oh, my God. That probably tastes really good.
So this is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
You see the influence in the U.S. or YouTube or social media,
mm-hmm,
we could do the same influencer by using our products.
But the thing about it, being a chef, we use the word fusion, and I mean they used to use the word fusion. They don't use the word fusion anymore. So fusion is you're combining whatever local, mm-hmm, to something foreign,
or two different cultures
Something together, obviously. Yeah, because no matter what it is, once you always in our culture, we always tend to have something local in it.
You must have
something local.
You must have.
And which is quite interesting, because if you go, when I went to the States, again, I'm talking about this a lot because it kind of ties into it. I forgot what it is to be a Trinidadian chef. I'm not ashamed. I'm not ashamed to say, because I was in a different environment. So I already knew how to cook stew chicken, pilau, and all these different things. So I was trying to figure out, okay, what's different and what culture, food trend I could pick up from them. I didn't really pick up nothing, because they don't really have nothing to really talk about. So I was even saying last week that our flavors in Trinidad is really a melting pot.
Mm-hmm.
It is, and we had to appreciate it. And I will draw a reference in 2010. Well, you know, in 2005, 2010, there were TST&T. Where we had TST&T in Trinidad. And we would invite different chefs from around the country to come and highlight. And in 2010, was a last minute ditch to invite chefs from all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
We had Claus Meyers was here as well. Claus Meyers had the top restaurant in Denmark for about 5 years.
Yes.
Claude Myers was here?
Claude Myers, yeah. He was the top restaurant in the world for about 5 years.
Yes.
So he came here, and we had in Hilton 2 days conference where the chefs meeting each other. Mm-hmm. Chef from India all over here. And I took Shadow Benny, mm-hmm, from Mentos, local celery, mm-hmm, and showed it to these guys. Local fine time. And listen to me. They went crazy.
Yeah. They keep smelling it.
They just went off in it. They went off in it.
They love to smell when they discover Shadow Benny. They just like to keep smelling it. It's a weird thing.
Not the Caucasians, you know. The Caucasians.
They are very familiar with
it. They're familiar, but they don't like
it. They don't call
food.
It.
They have the Mexican call it culantro.
Is cilantro. Yeah,
culantro.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Mexican call it culantro.
You know, the Italians, they use the fine thyme.
They use
the pastas
thyme.
And so.
Yeah, in the pastas.
Yes. I feel almost anything. That's like a hand and foot to me. That change and enhance the flavors of almost anything.
But small time?
Yeah.
I rather oregano on my pasta.
Mm-hmm. Well, oregano has its own unique flavor. But it has its own unique taste.
This is where we open up the phone lines, guys. 627-3223-625-2257. You can call in and speak with both chefs. I don't know if you have any questions. Maybe how to boil an egg.
Well, most of Trinidad, believe it or not, I find Trinidadians could cook.
Yeah.
Most people could cook or I'm watching this way. I'm frying egg.
No. But in all seriousness, I can cook to a point.
I think most women could cook that they say they can't cook because they don't want to be asked to cook.
No, they're
pleading for say, I can't cook. I can't cook.
Not where I come from. Where I come from, my culture and heritage and stuff,
mm-hmm.
the women do the cooking. So, it was like a normal thing for me. My mom used to cook for the community at times.
Okay.
So it's only now I think growing older, I realize, should I say that, men are considered more of a chef than women. I mean, but worldwide.
I think that culture wasn't so years ago in Trinidad. Eh?
Exactly. It's only now. Exactly.
It's more to the mothers.
Internationally, it is, but yes, not here.
It wasn't here.
It was a shock to me.
Yeah, it wasn't here about 25 years ago.
You're quite right.
It wasn't here. And that is why you find about 20 years ago, a lot of the executive chefs in Trinidad used to be the foreigners.
Yeah.
They used to be.
Well, that's a whole different topic, which I didn't see want to get into. Probably one day I'll get into that topic because there are chefs, international chefs, and I could just touch on this just very, very briefly because it's very passionate for me. And I think there's international chef working in this country for over $50,000 a month. And the locals would never. And which hurts, I had to leave and come back and still being treated the same way after so long.
And in your own country.
There is no respect. Absolutely none.
I totally agree with that. And when you say that, we could talk hours for this.
Yeah, we could go on and on. And we'll start to get it.
Your chef hours is crazy hours.
But we don't want to scare the next generation. Remember the topic? The topic is...
No, but I mean, this is a field where if you have to work 100 hours in one day, which only have 24 hours, you're going to do it because it is a passion. What do you call it? A passion job?
Is a passionate job as well.
The field.
I don't even want to comment.
It's a field that you have to be passionate about.
I don't want to comment because it's
on my journey.
Why? Because you're not passionate about it?
On my journey coming as a chef, I remember working with some international chef in Trinidad. And I worked with him for 4 or 5 years. And I was already about 12 years in the business. And I was just going nonstop. And I literally was walking into the kitchen. And I told him I had enough. And they walk behind me. One chef walk behind me. He said, where are you going? I said, I had enough chef. He said, no. Stick with what you're doing and your time will come to earn. And so said. So done. You had to stick with it. You had to be, you know, your passion is one thing, but you had to be dedicated. 18 hours in a kitchen sometimes. 18 hours.
But we we're being realistic. We're saying it and then the next generation here, 18 hours.
18 hours?
It's an 8-hour shift. So how you telling that somebody is 18 hours, you know, and people may not understand.
Yeah.
And this job is not this job is really a passionate job.
Yeah.
I would really say passionate job. And I'm wondering if you think the next generation with having that passion, that could really take 3 days to make a stock.
To add to your question, a question came to me a couple of months ago, and I was asked by a group, how do we pass the baton on to this generation? And I still haven't answered that question. I said, how do we pass it? And still, it's a broad question, it's a broad answer for something like that. Because I was one of the official chefs for 2007 World Cup in the West Indies, where I got the contract for the company, and I traveled to all the different countries to the finals in Barbados. And on game day, I had a team of 10 cooks, 3 chefs, a butcher with me. And a day for a game, we were spending 18 to 19 hours a day. We was in the kitchen by 1 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Breakfast for both teams on the day. Lunch and post-match meal. For 6 weeks. I want to ask this next generation, are you prepared to dedicate?
Well, there are some of them out there, because when I went to culinary school and I chose this my first culinary school, and I chose this career, and I sat down in, I can't remember if it was English class or what class I was in, and the lecturer said, it takes 10 years to be an executive chef. And in my mind I said, what better I go and be a doctor. It could never take 10 years to be a chef. Yeah. I kid you not, it could never take 10 years because to me this was madness. It takes actually longer than 10 years.
I'm still in it.
Sometimes people...
It's a lifetime.
Chefs work 30 years and they still don't have the title of executive chef.
It's true.
So and, true.
And sometimes they are one of the best, but there's always somebody that's better than you.
Yeah.
Or I don't know if it's just that chefs have a lot of ego. I don't know if anybody could answer that.
It have.
she said that, I can see the eye roll up again. it comes with it. Go ahead, it comes with it,
and some chefs are very passionate. Some are very rowdy.
Have you ever, and then I'm a bit off a topic. Have you ever pelt a spoon at anyone?
In a kitchen?
Yeah.
I have.
But has she not the chef?
No, I didn't go to that extreme, but you will know my presence, is it?
Have you ever fired someone on the spot?
Yes.
Get out of my kitchen. Yeah. Don't ever come back.
Yeah. There was a chef using a particular ingredient. That I didn't agree with, and he had it. He was just using it, and I came on the line and I saw him. Okay. That was a second warning and one time.
Okay.
All right, folks. It's just 10 seconds before the hour of 5 o'clock. It's now time for your 5 p.m. newscast, brought to you by the TBC Radio Network and Freedom 106.5. All right, folks, welcome back to the program Overdrive. It's 10 minutes after the hour of 5 o'clock right here on Freedom 106.5. And we have in studios with us two chefs, Chef Shiraz and Chef...
Sean Spencer.
You see, I say that's Chef Shiraz, and you know, he had to say he's Sean Spencer. You understand?
Did I say it with your ring tape?
So he had to say, he's the he's the better chef. That we trying to.
Oh, damn. You know? That's how it came out.
No, wait. And is that a true thing that chefs, so, they have a thing with chefs?
I was going to give you a little history. So, you see, a pause for a cause, right? And I'm going to give you my whole fabulousness now. That's so funny. Yeah, but we do have some big egos, right, Siraj? You can say we have some egos. Yeah. And there's always some sort of competition. I was actually, I turned on a television show. The name of it was Cutthroat Kitchen.
Okay.
And when I was in Manhattan. And I didn't like the premise of the show because the show was chef. They give it. I know he ever saw it.
I saw something like
right.
What Cutthroat Kitchen is with chicken. That's what Gordon Ramsay.
No, that's not Gordon Ramsay. And I didn't like it because it's so. You shouldn't be trying to sabotage another human being.
That's just the program.
Yeah, but for me, I don't think it should be sabotaging, and I didn't want to put myself into that zone. Yeah, Cutthroat Kitchen. It always showed. I think it probably stopped showing now.
Was it Alton Brown? Was it Alton Brown?
I think Alton Brown was one of the early hosts.
Yeah.
And so it's a very competitive environment. You do have a school, right, Siraj?
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about your school.
A year ago, over the years, people keep asking me, Chef, why don't you give out a class here and there and do something to share knowledge a little bit? And last I did take the opportunity and I went to Shagona's, and there was a young lady have an artistry cake decorating school. So I rented off one of our kitchens and I started doing courses, introduction to different cuisine. One of the courses I started with was the creative international cuisine, and is an introduction to French, traditional French, Italian, authentic Indian, North and South, sweet and savory.
Yes.
And creative.
How was it turn out?
I was shocked. We only take 8 to 10 people in a class.
So you have small classes?
Yeah, we do go more than 10 in a class because we want to keep that individual.
Do you think we still need a culinary school in Trinidad?
That is a broad question because I was asked about that when the Shagaramas shut down. And that was really, really unfortunate, you know. We could do with a culinary school in Trinidad. And since the Shagaramas closed on, there's a lot of places opening up now offering courses. But it had to be, no, this is the key thing, right? It had to be, my school, I turned into the academy in January. We turned into the Chef Charles Culinary Academy. Mm-hmm. It is a Ramsey Plaza, one of Shogunas. And we offer the different courses, whether it's kids, Asian classes, baking and pastry, creative international cuisine. And this year, we went into the certificate in culinary arts. To me, it's a compact 3 months. And people call in, and people come to it. We do only 8 to 10 person in our class.
Mm-hmm.
And we cover from food safety, training, hospitality, baking and pastry, cuisines. And even the chef lecturers who I have work with me, they used to be in Shagaramas. Mm-hmm. And they say, "Chef, what are you doing here?" Never happened.
You're saying that, I remember.
It never happened.
When I went back out to culinary school, but hotel school had now open. I think, well, I graduated in 99. I ain't that old, so don't watch me cut tie, right? But one of the things I always remember, and who went to school with me could probably remember this. We couldn't enter the classroom if we weren't in full uniform.
Yeah.
We couldn't enter the classroom if your nails were long.
Yeah.
You couldn't enter the classroom
if your hat was slightly tilted.
I was a part-time facilitator in Shagaramas.
Yeah,
if you had one button missing or it wasn't buttoned properly.
Oh, you were there too?
Yeah, I used to.
You see it now.
I was a facilitator there for 4 years. At that time, I was the executive chef in Botticelli's, and I used to go down there I think it was about 2 months.
There was a pride in being a chef.
Yeah.
There was a pride. Yeah, there was actually a pride. There was an honor. To be a chef.
What I explained to my class as well, right? You have to be ready, confident, and when you pull that apron, in that kitchen and go behind that, so you have to be 100% confident and ready to go. Mm-hmm. Be proud of what you're doing.
Yeah.
Be proud. So when you get the opportunity to earn that apron, you earn that apron, and you put on that apron, and you strap up yourself, and you're ready to go.
Well, now it's chef's the big thing is the chef's jacket. To get the jacket now huge honor.
Well,
at the end of culinary school.
That's just because of television.
I talk about in the
school. In our world, it's not really.
It's not like that.
It's not like that.
Because
you know what it is? You know what it is to as an honor for a chef?
Mm.
To actually have your item on a menu.
Okay.
You see, you actually coming up with an item and having it on a menu.
And head chef adding your dish.
What is a good honor as well, coming up as a junior chef or training with chefs in a kitchen, you look up to the executive chef, and when that chef changing his menu and making his menu, if you get a call by the executive chef and say, "Hey, what you have in mind?"
Yeah.
To make an input, what? Just by he asking you, "What do you think about this? What you have in mind? What do you think we should put on our menu? Give me an item." Listen, man, that's the ticket right there. That's the lottery ticket, because that chef exactly considering you to come up with something.
I looked at the movie 100 for Journey.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever see that movie? It was an Indian restaurant opposite a French restaurant.
Yeah.
And they couldn't get along.
I saw clips of it.
Yeah.
But it's how the both restaurants conducted their kitchen was so different.
Yeah.
And
the young guy went to work in a Michelin star restaurant.
He ended up in a Michelin
but
star restaurant.
But fundamentals, it may be different, but the fundamentals is the same.
It's the same.
Because this is one of the reasons why, when I said that, I get some goosebumps, because you see your fundamentals, if you don't have, and this is the thing with being a young chef, and I would have to tell them this, and this is one of the greatest advice I could ever give. I started off working at Royal Castle. Siraj, we met there.
Yeah.
And I remember cutting chicken for 12 seconds or something. So
four chicken in a minute and a half.
Or something like that, right? But you remember, right? We used to go competition. Right, in cutting chicken. And remembering how your temperatures, your fryers, 350 degrees, 375, how to clean a fryer. All the fundamentals, every place that we work, and Siraj can tell me if I'm going wrong, you have to learn to master that area, that environment, that restaurant, your basics.
Before they even allow you to touch
to
up
move on.
A spot of actual food.
Yeah.
Because, and I want to elaborate fast on it. When you have bigger hotels and cruise ship, and you have different stations, a sauce station, grill station, or whatever, and you probably a supervisor, but before you reach a supervisor or chef de cuisine or party, whatever, you had to master that station before you could even move on. And that is really coincidental life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so you have to master certain stuff before you move on. And I remember sometime watching Chinese movie, those old kick-ups and stuff, and sometimes I feel like I'm a trainee.
Sometimes you're in a kitchen working, right? Depending on the kitchen and where you work and the different aspects of the kitchen. Sometimes it takes 2 or 3 years, if you remain in the job, to reach any stove, you know?
Yeah.
I worked in a particular restaurant. It took me 2.5 to 3 years before the chefs called me on the stove.
I was pushy.
I
was a hand on foot.
I remember Chef Masahari Morimoto. Mm. He said it. He didn't know if at that time it was because of his culture or what, but it took him 7 years before he was even acknowledged in his kitchen, in the kitchen.
Yeah, it took me 3 years before I could. And when I went on the stove, I was just sorting the pot, and they were throwing everything.
Yeah,
I was just like a robot.
Yeah.
All right. And I was just okay.
Well, they have a name for it, you know, a scutter, a skitter, or something like that.
Yeah, sous chef.
No, she's talking about apprentice. She's talking about apprentice.
Yeah, like the apprentice. They have a name for them. They just call them a
saucier? Yeah?
No.
It's like a put down, like to let you know your place.
Oh, okay.
Is it scutter? Or somebody
could
like
call
that?
You that.
Yeah,
tell
maybe.
Yeah.
Folks, the phone line is still open for the next 10 minutes. 627-3223 or 625-2257. You can talk directly to the chefs.
Yes, I'm going to give a quick story. When I started, when I left Royal Castle and I went to cook Chinese, and I was in a restaurant cooking, learning as an apprentice, and the Chinese chefs, they would hide.
Yeah.
I put myself in charge of the storeroom, and and I would pack everything in a particular way.
Yeah.
So if I'm seeing the seasoning duck, and I see the going to the storeroom, and I would go back and follow him after. And if I see the vinegar is turned a certain way, I know he touched the vinegar.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's how I had to learn to cook. And I used to go through Port of Spain, because I used to work at Marval. Go through Port of Spain and go in Ishmael Khan bookstore, and I would look at dishes, because at the time we didn't have Google and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And I would see a dish, and I would spend my own money and go back to the job and cook it. I was lucky to cook the staff meal.
Yeah.
And that's how I put myself through little training.
Yeah.
And I give the staff a lot of stupid food too. Yeah, many times I make callaloo in a walk.
Yeah. I did a similar thing. When the chefs called me, this restaurant was in the Grand Bazaar. And I was already 10, 12 years in the business, but it was my first exposure to international cuisine. And this restaurant was one of the biggest restaurants in the country and the Caribbean. But the chefs, they won't teach you anything. But when they sorted the pot and showed the meal, I used to taste it. I used to taste, and I used to break down the spices. And I learned
Your palate allows you to...
And I break down all the different dishes and the masalas and everything. And I taught myself that entire cuisine.
Are you teaching your kids? I shouldn't say the kids. Are you teaching your... Because what you just said is it's very, very important.
Yeah.
The fundamentals, again, because there are a lot of chefs do not know how to cook different cuisines of the world.
Yeah.
No, cook. That's a whole different bandwagon, because that's like banquet.
Yeah.
Cooking. So to be cooking at that level, you know. But go ahead.
Yeah. So we teach whatever cuisine we teach, we give it the history. We do Manchurian, we do Hakka.
Okay.
So we explain the history. But where is Hakka or Manchurian? I say, well, in the 1800s, when the Chinese trademen go to India, they work with the spices. Uh-huh. So the Indian spices with the Chinese spices marry together, and that will have your Manchurian and Hakka as well too.
Wow.
So we teach you different cuisine, but we also give the history of the cuisine as well too.
Okay. So they have they get a wronged.
They get a wronged as well too. Yeah. And then I bring all the original spices. I make some of these spices as well too. So we teach them the spices. So we do traditional French, we tell you how the French cuisine started. Italian, we do all the marinara sauce from scratch. We do the pasta.
And where's this school?
It's in Ramsing Plaza 1 in Chaguanas.
Okay.
You will get it on Instagram, Chef Shiraz 1. You get on Facebook, but my catering company, Chef Shiraz Fine Food Catering. You go on.
All my education on food was, I got it from the best. I learned from the best. You know the movie Ratatouille? That's how I learned.
And I'm watching you with such a, because I cook ratatouille last week. And for the love of money, Trinidad ratatouille does not have rat.
It do have ratatouille.
Oh my God.
In it.
It's an inspiring show to
learn to cook. I was surprised that it's actually a cartoon that made me interested in cuisine. That was an apprentice life.
Yeah. It's really a nice show.
What that kid went through in that is real.
That's one of my favorite shows. Actually, that's what the only show I had on DVD when they had DVD.
So that's why you didn't laugh at me. Okay, all right.
I took it personal because one of the things too that for me as a chef, so I'm not in the hotels anymore. I'm not at fine dining anymore. I have a regular restaurant. So what I tend to do is try to cook hotel standard. Yeah. It's very difficult because the price point is different.
It's a very, and a lot of the public doesn't understand
the food costing and how much as a chef we really, really try.
Yeah.
So it's very challenging for me, and I switch up my menu daily. Yeah. So what I cooked yesterday, I can't say remember what I cooked yesterday. Kid you not. But for people who want to get into this and who really wants to be a chef and really aspiring to be a chef, and they say, you know what, I could really do this. What advice do you have for them?
Don't be cocky.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of maintain your ego a little bit. Be open-minded. Come into the kitchen. Keep absorbing. Ask questions. Find a chef or environment that you could look at the chef as a mentor.
Do you think, I'm glad you said that, do you think money is one of the key elements that for a young chef to be looking at? Because the first thing they ask...
Don't think about the money.
I don't think so at all.
I'll tell you something.
You know why I say that? Yes. Just hold a point there.
Mm-hmm.
A friend of mine, a big established hotel, they had an ad out. And three people, three people applied, but three in particular said, I want to hear what you're offering before I could make a decision.
Yeah. I think that's one of the worst things you could say in an interview in that kind of environment.
And I will tell you something. When I travel, and as a chef, you have to invest in yourself. I invest in myself when I travel around the world.
Mm-hmm.
I never went to culinary school.
Okay.
I learn hands-on, which is the best you could ever. Not no disregard to anybody when culinary school. But the hands-on training, I travel around the world from India, Europe, and I understand the culture and the cuisine of the people. And I hope to transform it into my culinary academy. And I tell people, my culinary academy is 30 years old. They say, what do you mean by that? I say, all that knowledge is now taking physical form.
Well, I don't like the comment just now that you made that about the culinary
some
schools.
Some nonsense.
I don't like that. You get defensive because I went to culinary school. But I don't want to give none of them the credit.
I don't want to give them the credit
because of the fact what he just said is important.
Yeah.
You see the hands-on experience?
Yeah.
I went to two. And when I was in Manhattan, I was offered a job in the school before my class get over because the hands-on experience. You saw those little Chinese who was hiding from me.
Mm-hmm.
I took over the kitchen. I was the one of the only black man cooking Chinese food.
I'm
good at it.
Because when I travel, and if I'm in Manhattan, I go to the institute, different culinary institute, I travel and I visit them. And I ask one question compared to Shagaramas.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something very honest and real. I ask them in Shagaramas. Well, students come to Shagaramas, either they have the associate, and when they look for a job, they look at the money. No, when they come out of the hospitality school, you have not to go into the field. When I asked the schools abroad, including the Manhattan Institute, I went to the administrator, I said, when your students graduate here, or the insider, what do you tell them when they come out of here? They said, well, chef, we tell them that we are preparing them to go out in the field to be a chef.
So you're spending all that money to be prepared? Yeah. So now the work actually starts. So that is why I said the jacket doesn't really make any sense. Because, the jacket, you get the jacket, but the jacket, you're not a chef, really. You could have a jacket. There are plenty of chefs that you probably
and they
know.
Would not allow you even on the line.
And, there are plenty of people who I know. A lot of people, I have issues sometimes even working because I'm a very hard person to work. He's laughing. Because I'm a very tough person to work for because I've put myself through the mill.
Yeah.
and 30 seconds, not even 30 seconds, 10 seconds, I could tell. Yeah. The minute you pick up a knife,
you could tell.
You could tell. If I'm wrong.
No, you could pick up and tell
if the person is trained, if they want to be trained, if they're trainable, if they have a good attitude, if they're going to go far.
Yeah.
It's a lot really comes with it. Now I'm really thinking, you got to really be humble. This industry, this is one field you have to be, because if you're not humble, the industry will humble you.
It could crash.
It will humble you.
But there are a lot of chefs too, and this is not upon either of you. There are a lot of chefs that are arrogant, and you can't question them about the food.
I
don't mean question them to critique or say anything bad. On learning about what people are eating, you know, you ask sometimes because the food is good, and sometimes you want to know, well, chef, what they put in that or whatever, and they dismiss you in fine dining restaurants.
Especially that would happen a lot in fine dining, and you would get that.
And I find it's really a disrespect. And another thing I wanted to ask you before we go, what do you think about returning the Michelin star?
Ooh.
If you got one, do you think you would ever return it?
I wouldn't. If I got one, I wouldn't return a Michelin star, because the hard work was put in before I got it, and I mean you had to think about the star is just it's just about that.
What's
moment.
His name? You know the chef I'm talking about.
No.
He gave back his he had 3 Michelin stars and he gave them back.
You know what it is to get a Michelin star? You know
and that is what he said. He said the hours and the time and effort he put into it is time that he could have spent with his family, and it's just not important to him anymore.
I had the privilege of working with a chef. I had 2 Michelin stars. We had a restaurant, a farm to table. It was called Chalk Point Kitchen. It was a celebrity-driven restaurant. So the kitchen, they come to the kitchen first and then go to the dining room. So the kitchen was spot on, immaculate.
Yeah.
So there's where I cook for Denzel Washington. I turn around and I say, "Hey, Spencer." When I turn around, was Denzel behind me, Rihanna, and a lot of celebrities. But it was part of the lifestyle at the time, and so it comes with the territory. So you can't be cocky.
It does.
You have to be humble. And this chef, Michelin star chef, that guy ride me so hard. I didn't stay at the job. I actually left. And the owner kind of opened that restaurant for me to be there. All right. And I just, at that time in my life, you know, I walked away from it. But anyway, Siraj, nice of really having you here.
Thanks again.
Could you say which part we can meet you again? Your school is again?
The Chef Sharas Culinary Academy, opposite Ramsing Plaza, one of Shagonas. You could get me on Instagram at Chef Sharas 1 or Chef Sharas at Culinary Academy. We have a lot of courses. We start courses happening right now. We're going to wrap up by November, and we restart our next semester in January. So you put Instagram and you're going to get Chef Sharas 1.
I'll definitely visit there, because I didn't even know Shagarama's closed down.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, she has. So long. Well, I didn't get to ask him so many questions I wanted to ask him. Because this is next week, I have the privilege of coming back next week.
I'll be back next Tuesday.
Right. So next week, we'll really get into it and really ask some questions and kind of figure out how we could really get these young people up and rocking.
There's a lot of information to share. There's loads of information to share that will be beneficial to this new generation who really want to take it and go with it.
Yeah.
You have a lot of information.
Yeah. Well, awesome.
All right. It was really nice having you guys. If I'm wrong next week, I'd love to do it all over again. This is the most I laugh for the day. So it was nice. It really was nice. And I'll go home and try to learn how to boil an egg tonight.
One question I'm going to ask you. And I'm going to ask you because I have first time I'm meeting you.
Uh-huh.
Have you ever eat condensed milk and bread?
Yes, I have.
All right.
And sada roti and condensed milk as well.
Sada roti?
Yeah,
I never had sada roti. You too, Siraj?
Yeah. We had sweet roti long time, boy.
What?
Sweet roti. There was pancakes.
Yeah.
Sweet roti. As a parents leave your house, sweet roti.
All right.
I didn't call it sweet roti, but I was just making a mess. It was really, really nice having you guys in studios. Thank you so very much for the information. And as I just said, I'll learn how to boil an egg. So you can critique next week. I'll bring one for you next week, and you'll critique and tell me if it's garbage material, if it's wife material, if it's culinary material.
We'll bring it next week.
Yeah.
I'm excited now. Now I'm coming.
Egg,
okay. Thanks, guys. Yeah. I look forward to speaking with you guys again. Take care.
Thank you very much, man.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, man.